Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Hong Phuc Dang from Vietnam. I run Force Asia organization supporting open source and free software movement in Asia. We are connected with many developer communities. And of course, DBN is one of our favorites. So we host, I think, 2 media dev cons at our Force Asia annual summit in the past. But this is my first time in dev cons. I'm really happy to be here. And okay, so I have here on stage with me 6 excellent developers, DBN developers, coming from very diverse backgrounds, and especially they come from 6 different regions around the world. So today they will share with us their life story, experiences, challenges working in the community, and also they will suggest ideas and best practices how we can scale and sustain projects within DBN. With that, I will start to briefly introduce our panelists. I will start with Bidel Gabi. He's from the US. He's probably the earliest DBN contributor here in the room. Started in 1994, 24 years with the project. Yeah, I was blown away by reading about all his work in the Wikipedia page. It is an honor to have you here with us. Thank you. And super happy to have Devi Bravo from a very special place, Tahiti. Yeah. Anyone here have been to Tahiti? You know where that is? Well, Devi perhaps could tell you more later. So Devi right now working is as a high school teacher
for the French government?
Yeah, for the French government. Okay, yeah, you can explain more later. I met Devi last night, and my first impression was you're really friendly and very helpful. So thank you very much for showing me around the way and everything. And I have here Jonathan Carter from South Africa. Yeah, Jonathan actually became a DBN developer early last year. It's a very special story about his journey and his relationship with DBN, which you will share with the audience later. Yeah, and Hideki Yamane, yeah, from Japan, right? And so maybe you already know Hideki, he played a very important role in growing the local community in Japan. He also a tech writer for a local magazine, yeah? And I have here, I try to how to say your name correctly, Jose Ortega from Guatemala. Even though he looks very young, he actually has more than 10 years experience as a free software advocate. And he also a member of the Software Libre Guatemala, which is a very important organization that fosters free software movement in the country. And last but not least, I have here with me Nicola Demontre. Thank you. So Nicola is actually one of the organizers of this DevCon. If you haven't noticed that, he's the man behind the scene. Yeah, but not only this DevCon, but many other events. And thank you. I know you are very busy, but thank you very much for taking this 1 hour here with us. And seeing I have you here, thank you and the team for putting up such an amazing event for us. Thank you very much. Okay, so to kick things off, I would like to ask each panelist this question. What brought you to DBN in the first place, and what is your current goal? What is your involvement in DBN these days? And finally, please tell us one thing about you that people here would know. So I will start with Bidel.
Okay, let's see. The story of how I became involved in Debian is actually kind of long and involved, but interesting. There was a reporter in the UK several years ago who published a lengthy interview with me with lots and lots of details. The very short version is that I was involved in a project to develop a payload for an amateur radio satellite. and I was collaborating with people in many different countries, and this was before Linux had become a really big deal. And one of my friends started using Linux as his platform for working on the project, and that caused me to begin to take Linux seriously, and I started looking for which sort of version of Linux I should play with. And I discovered that there was an effort to figure out how to use Debian for doing ham radio related work. And that's sort of the thing that brought me into the project. I got sucked in very, very quickly. And within 2 or 3 months of joining the project, I had taken over several packages, was maintaining different pieces of software, had built the first server that was fully dedicated for Debian use, and had become sort of very involved in the center of the project. That was in late 1994. Something about me that people don't know. Today, I've done lots of things in the project. Those of you who know me will recall that I was Debian project leader at one point. I spent almost 10 years as chairman of the Debian technical committee. And I've been involved in all sorts of craziness over the years in terms of architecture for our infrastructure in the project and some other things, big decisions over the years. Today, I'm actually retired in the corporate world, and the things I still do for Debian are to maintain a few base essential packages, things like gzip and tar and sudo, which I've been working on fixing some bugs in today. And something that people don't know about me, boy, that's... Actually, many people have been immensely surprised that given the amount of travel I did during my corporate career, this is the first time I've ever been in Taiwan. So there's something most people don't know about me.
Well, just a quick question there. So I just heard over the bracket you also run your own company that develop hardware for rocketry. Do people here know about that?
Yeah, actually, almost everybody in Debian knows about that. But for those who don't and those who are watching on the video stream, Keith Packard and I are partners in a small company that does open hardware and open source solutions for the electronics that are used in high-power model rockets, which is a hobby thing. I've also personally built electronics that's now on satellites that are in orbit and lots of other stuff like that. But yeah, it's enough about me. Other folks, I'm sure I have things to say.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Hi. So to answer the question, I get involved in the project.
How did you start it with Debian?
I had quite a busy life 15 years ago when I was living in Paris. And after that, when I moved overseas in a little island, I began to manage to much time in front of me. And I could finally use that time to do something constructive about the tools I was actually using. That's why it was the tip that made me freed me some time actually to contribute and first thing that I made because I was not in the computer world actually was to help the translation project to help people who don't speak English very well like me as you can see to actually be able to install software or understand the documentation. And that's what drove me in the beginning. And once you get involved, if you're happy with the project, you do more. And that's how I came involved in that project. And some people might not know about me, it's pretty hard, I don't know. Maybe you don't know, but I very much like rabbits. Okay. Cheers.
Thank you. So my Debian story and how I got there is also a long and twisty road, so I'll try to make a short version of it. But in 2000, when I finished high school, my family wasn't doing so well, so there wasn't a way for me to go to university. So I just continued support doing a bunch of IT work around the neighborhood and a few companies I knew. And at this stage, I discovered Linux and played with it more and more and found that I can do a lot of things that I did with Windows servers just with Linux, just installing Apache and Samba already blew my mind. So I started doing this for all the companies I supported already and found that it was great. And I thought I should really get Linux into schools and teach other high school kids how to use Linux and how to administer it. So at this point, I posted about it on a Linux user group. And at this point, the Shuttleworth Foundation, who was also in that Linux user group, was talking about getting thin clients into schools for educational purposes. So I thought, this is great, I should get in touch, because I could piggyback on that to teach Linux in schools. And so a year later, I started working for them full time, and it snowballed into a lot of things. I became a Ubuntu contributor, and later on a Motu, and by 2012, I joined my first DevConf, and then things snowballed into the Debian direction from there on. So yeah, and last year I finally became a Debian developer. So that's it in a nutshell. Something that someone might not know about me, I'm a big Star Trek fan. That's all I can think of right now.
Thank you.
Oh. Hi, I started to use Linux as a system administrator in small company, and because there's no money, so I should use Linux for the proxy or DNS or web server. And there's people in the Debian people in Linux users group, local user group, so I choose Debian for the first choice. And I asked many questions to local mailing list. Then I thought, I want the answer from the reliable people. Then what should I do for it? I thought, if I'm kind of a contributor, they probably don't ignore me. If there's a people and just a user and a contributor, probably they choose the questions from the contributors, I thought. So I started to work in about the translation work, because I'm not good at English. So I don't read much English article. So I started to the translation, DevConf message from English to Japanese. That's the start of my Debian contribution. Recently, I play with some packages like DevBootstrap. How many uses DevBootstrap? Oh, thank you. And fix bugs and make some regressions, and some people angry with me. Hey, it's okay. Why you update these packages? But it's a fun time for me to get some reaction from users. That's all.
Well, my first approach with Debian was in the university with the compilers course. For some reason, it was a requirement to install Debian to run some Java Lexer tool. So I installed it and I really like it. Then I went to DevCon 2012 and I really loved the community. It was like, oh, I need to be part of this. So I started to contribute maybe 2 months after DevCon. And then I became a DD 2 years ago. Actually, yeah, and one of the most things I like is I started contributing with the Debian Astro team, which I am kind of astronomy fan, so I'm kind of contributing with a lot of people and in the astronomy community. One thing you don't know about me is like I'm a hobbyist bass player, so that's all.
Hi.
I started using Linux when I was a high school student. I was using Gentoo back then because, like, watching compilation lines scroll by was cool. And when I started university, I became involved in the student ISP there, and all the servers were running Debian. So I started, like, using Debian to understand what was going on. And I guess I had to package something, and I started getting involved in packaging. And then the infrastructure to actually submit packages wasn't that good, so I contributed there. And then I got root access to the server. and so basically, yeah, you just put your hand in a small cog, and then your arm gets sucked in, and you keep contributing, I guess. One thing that people might not know about me is that I watch, like, way too many TV shows, like, a lot.
What kind of show do you watch?
Oh, one of the last things that I rewatched was Halt and Catch Fire. Very good show about the 80s.
Okay, so before I move on to the next question, I just want to ask the audience quickly, how many of you here are non-Debian contributors? You want to be in the future, but you are not yet Debian contributors. Could you please raise your hand? Okay, good. Good. Okay, so back to the next question. What is your greatest accomplishment or your proudest moment during your Debian time? I will start with Nicola.
So during my time in Debian, I've contributed to the outreach team, which runs Google Summer of Code and Outreachy internships in Debian. And I think the thing that I'm the most proud of is making sure that the project keeps funding Outreachy internships in a regular manner, so that people can get involved in the project, underrepresented groups.
A question for you. So, do you need to be a Debian contributor to join the outreach team, or is it open for anyone to? How, like, what are the qualifications to be?
So, if you have some, I'm not currently involved in the outreach team anymore. But if you have something that you want to be done inside Debian, and you're not a contributor yet, I think you're going to be accepted as a mentor inside the team, and actually get, like, an internship slot to do the project that you want to include in Debian. It's way easier if you're already maybe known in the community, but it's not a strong requirement.
Thank you.
And of course, if you want to do an internship, then yeah, new contributors are, of course, welcome.
The same question for Jose.
Well, one of the things I'm proud of is the packaging of GlueViz, which is a data analysis tool which helps to analyze astronomical data. So it took me like packaging a lot of stuff to bring all the stack to Debian, and I really like that. But actually, I really enjoy every time I close a bug, because I know there's a lot of people is relying in Debian packages, so I'm just there to help them. So that's all.
Question on the bug. So do you remember any, like, very difficult bug, and how much time did you spend on the hardest bug in your life so far?
There will be plenty. Probably once with PySBN, which is not related with, yeah, but it's really hard package, and it's really hard to keep it building in a lot of architectures. So that's one of.
How much time do you spend on it?
Maybe 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. You have a question? So we leave some time at the end for questions. We only have 2 minutes.
So, as she said, I'm a tech writer. So I'm writing the Debian article in Japanese tech magazine for 5 years. So I spread the Debian information along the people in Japan.
Okay, so I have a question about when people talk about Japan, they always talk about the Japanese manga. It's really popular for popular. Japanese people.
Because my nick is the picture the Japanese manga character.
Uh-huh. Do you have plan to make a Debian manga so to promote the project?
There was the Ubuntu manga. Yeah. I know the author because I'm also the Ubuntu local Japan team. Mm-hmm. But the magazine was suspended because of the company issue there. It's nice if I can see the and lead the Debian pip. Debian manga, and but I saw some the hacker comic in Japan. The character uses Debian. Uh-huh. Oh, that's a thrill is he uses Debian, I guess.
Okay, so another question for you. So you said that you are a writer for a local magazine. So magazine is like a very traditional media that could have to send out the message to the public. Are there more tech writer like you in Japan about Debian? Anyone? Are there more tech writers like you about Debian, or do you have any plan that how to get more people to become writer?
If there's a lot of money, I know.
Is there any incentive? Do you get paid by writing for the magazine?
Yes, I got, but it's not so much. I spend every weekend, the return is not so much because probably you know the check the tech issue is so hard to reproduce or to use the correct word. Checking the correct word is hard, and it's I want more people to get involved to write about Debian, but if you want more money, I don't.
Well,
it's not a money issue. Yeah. It's a kind of love.
Yeah. So I think the motivation could be to have your name on a printed paper. Now everything online, but now you get open a book, open a magazine, it's your name right there. I think it could be a good motivation for people here who want to write about Debian.
So there's a few things that I was proud of in Debian. One thing wasn't really my fault, but that was how well DebConf 16 went in Cape Town, which is my home city. That was really a nice DebConf, and I still have people telling me, oh, that was a great DebConf. I'm glad to, but I was just a very small part of it. But that's definitely one thing that stands out for me. But also, during the stretch release, I did a lot of testing on the testing images that were available and filed some bugs and fixed one or two of them as well. And that's something I'm really happy with. And I'd also suggest to anyone who wants to get involved into Debian, testing the pre-release images is extremely useful and valuable to the project. And it's a good way to get exposure to many parts of the project as well, because you learn to file bugs, you learn to try to reproduce other people's bugs. So it's a good idea to keep a watch on when alphas and betas are released, and especially the final images. And install something like VirtualBox or QEMU on your machine and learn to install Debian images on there. And that will get you a long way to get involved with Debian.
A question for you. I'm just curious, what is so good about the DevCon in Cape Town? I think many people here haven't been to Cape Town before. What is so good?
Well, it was a lot cooler and not as usual.
Jonathan, we just started today. We haven't finished DevCon yet. Okay? You can't tell.
And we had lots of spaces to relax and sit around and chat. And the social aspect of it was really good. And I think that makes a big difference.
Okay, but we can't tell if this is not better. You know, we have to wait until the end.
Sure.
Yeah. Debbie?
One of the things I've been most happy to when I was contributing to Debian was the first time I wrote a bug report that was actually acknowledged by the maintainer, the first time I proposed a patch that was accepted by the maintainer, the first time I made my own upload, the first time I met actual Debian developer in real life. That are the things that made me personally happy. And for the things that I'm most proud of, that might be the people around me that are now using Debian, just because showing them there's something that works, that is interesting, that might solve the problem, and so those people either around me or further away, but that I know I contributed for them to actually use Debian or go further. That makes me proud to be in the project for that.
I think that is very important to get people around you to use Debian. Not a question for you. So you are a high school teacher. Do all your students use Debian?
Sorry?
Your students, do they all use Debian?
Actually, we at the school where I'm currently, we don't use Debian on the computer. But a few years ago, I managed to, because I'm a teacher in mechanical engineering and some of these software are not running under Unix BASC computer. But a few years ago, I managed to teach some computer science. So I was able to install my own servers, install the actual clients. So I run Debian Edu. That's why I got involved in the Debian Edu project at the time. And yes, there was more than one room that was running Debian, that is still running Debian actually in Martinique. And at least one of the students of mine, after a few months, came back and showed me his computer. Told me, "Oh, now it's running Debian, and now it's running." So yes, that works.
Oh, okay. So, but I think, you know, I have a story of one First Asian member who is also a high school teacher. So being a teacher gives you a lot of opportunity. You can just teach anything you want, even though there is a lesson plan that you need to follow. But you can get the student together one evening and try to do something extra that lead them into one direction. So I think that being a teacher is a really cool position to have the impact in the young generation. So thank you very much, and hope that you continue to teach Debian to more people.
Thank you. Wow, things I'm proud of. It's really hard to winnow that down to just one, so I won't. I'll mention three. One of them is that because my corporate professional career caused me to travel an immense amount around the world, many of you who know me know that there were several years where I did more than 400,000 flight miles per year. And in that crazy period, one of the things I got to do was to meet people in different countries who were interested in Debian but didn't have any way to get their key signed so they could start the process of becoming a Debian developer. I can think of at least three countries where the first DD in that country was able to join the project because I visited their country on business and was able to meet them and sign their key. And so that's something I thought was really cool at the time. The second thing is that there was a year when I was invited to attend the Linux Kernel Summit on behalf of my employer to talk about what my employer needed from the kernel community. And I took advantage of that opportunity to rip off my HP shirt, exposing my Debian Swirl t-shirt underneath, and ask the kernel community the question, is Debian violating its social contract by shipping the Linux kernel in Maine? And that was the beginning of the discussion about getting all the binary firmware blobs out of the kernel, which took several years of work, and the kernel community had to buy in and agree to work on that. But the way we handle firmware for I/O devices around the Linux kernel today, I think the only reason that work ever got done is that someone like me was willing to stand up and in some way sort of embarrass the kernel community about the issue and get them to take it seriously. But I guess on some level, the thing I'm probably personally the most proud of in Debian is that today, when people talk about Debian, many of the things they talk about as being significant and important are things that I articulated in the second DPL election platform that I wrote the year that I actually got elected. And there are things like the importance of internationalization, the use of the universal operating system as a meme for the project. I'm not the one who came up with that phrase, but I elevated it in my DPL platform that year, and it's been around forever. And one other stupid little thing is that when I was the Debian project leader, I started a habit of writing bits from the DPL. And where the bits thing came from is a very long story, but it amuses me now every time I see a status report from some Debian team that says bits from, because that's something I introduced to the project as a meme. So. Oh, sorry, that was actually four.
I totally understand. It must be very hard for you to pick something like in your 24 years of history working in the community.
There are certainly moments that are even more infamous to the crowd, but they're not necessarily things I'm proud of. So,
so I know the audience will have more questions for you, but I have a like off the topic question a little bit. So you said that you travel so much, but this is your first time in Taiwan. Do you have any goal that you want to achieve during this trip, or getting partner for the rocketry companies, or something that you want to achieve?
Right now, I'm just trying not to melt. After that, we'll figure it out. I'm very excited to be here because I've had lots of business relationships over the years with companies in Taiwan, and I don't actually know. I can't really understand how it is that I never had a reason to travel here, but. It's been very interesting already, and I'm looking forward to some of the things we'll see on the day trips and so on. So,
thank you. Okay, so let's move on to the next question. Yeah, what do you see as current challenges in the community, and do you have any ideas, suggestion for better scaling and sustainability? Who would like to start first? You can decide.
I guess I can start. I think what I see in the community is gradually more diversity in the people that are represented inside the community. And I think this is like really critical for the long-term sustainability of the project, having like people from different backgrounds, from different viewpoints. I think the days where the average Debian developer was a 30, 40-year-old Western male are getting over, and I think that's good. So I hope this trend continues.
Before ask you, I just want to help you a bit here. So you, the question, you are an organizer of this DEF CON, so is there anything that the audience can help you during this week, or anything that you want us to have for the upcoming?
So if you're sticking around for the conference, please go to the DEPCONF website, click on the volunteer link on the top of the website, and sign up for some shifts, and we'll be very grateful for you.
I already signed up my shift, so please go look on the volunteer page. They still need more people to support.
Yes.
Thank you.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Okay, so what are the current challenges that you see in the community, and you have any ideas, suggestions to overcome the challenge?
Okay, one of the big challenges, because I have noticed with the people that are around me in Guatemala, is like probably it's really hard technically maybe to get to a newcomer start contributing in Debian. So probably we need better infrastructure or better tools to get these people to get easier to contribute, because sometimes you have to jack shaving a lot of stuff. So that's the challenge I see in the community. Maybe we need more tools to get contributors easy. And maybe now we're using GitLab in Salsa, so maybe we'll help better to get people to contribute with the packages.
Mm-hmm. So, and how big is the Debian community there in Guatemala, do you know?
Well, in a while it was a very big community, but the people start to work or having family. Now, right now, is we are 2 DDs there, but I'm the only active one. Uh-huh. So basically, it's just me.
So do you meet up from time to time, or how do you get connect with other people?
Well, right now, just IRC. That's kind of the problem, because there are the industry, the software industry over there is more like private software. Microsoft is pushing a lot in the universities, so people is not using Linux at all. So it's really, really hard to combine people to show them, because they are like, oh, money or something like that. So they are not contributing for passion or something like that.
Yeah, so it's the same question we have in Asia, but maybe the audience could help us later on. Yamini?
The challenge, the people should share the current status of each other. It probably becomes a chance for the contribution. People should not shout about the idea of the not the package name. Talk about the current problem of the package or translation or website or events or any talk about anything the current status, and another challenge is many in Japan, many younger people says Arch is cool, Debian is not. Mm-hmm. So we should make Debian cool again.
So I could talk all day about challenges, but one thing that I noticed, I was in Rwanda 2 weeks ago upgrading a computer lab there, and all the young people, they only use their phones and tablets, and this is their primary computer that they use. And I've spoken to some locals in Taiwan, and they say the same thing is happening here. And if you're using Android then as your primary operating system, then it's basically a consumer device, so you don't use your device to create and to make things. You just consume content, you watch videos, you download games, and that's what your computer is about. So I think in the larger free software community, we have a challenge to try to make mobile devices better for creating things. And at least on Android, you get F-Droid now, which is pretty cool. It's like Google Play, but only contains free software. And it's easy enough to use so that I can tell family and friends to install it, and they can figure out how to install the apps from themselves without any further involvement from my part. But there's a lot of things that's still difficult, like just getting a good Python environment on an Android device is quite difficult. And I think projects like the Librem 5, which is a phone made by Purism that will basically run Debian, will be great for many people who use a phone as a primary device. And if that can at least support some level of Android app compatibility, then that will open up a huge world for people. So I hope that, because it's a pity for me that we're a universal operating system, but we don't run on the most popular kind of computer that people have these days. So it feels like something that really should be solved somehow or another. I don't think there's any easy solution for it yet, but I think it's something we can think about and talk about more often.
Thank you.
Among the challenges, what I'm thinking of is on the human level. Sometimes we are a group of people. When we see each other, it can work. But sometimes when we are all in remote places, we only address to each other via mailing list or IRC, and we come from various different places, various different cultures, and sometimes we forget it, and we assume, oh, but why is this person not thinking like me? And sometimes we begin to fight with each other, and it's not always all right. But when we see each other in real life, like this kind of event, we remember that everyone around me is actually nice, and I can have a real discussion. And sometimes, just based on a misunderstanding, and we lose it. So, yeah. In order to solve that, yes, help us remember we are a diverse community, and remember that we are human. That's one of the challenges I think we are sometimes fighting against, and we can improve and do better. I hope.
So it's sort of interesting, being from the United States, I sometimes think that the free software community in my country is disadvantaged in a way because so many of the large proprietary software companies are based in the US. And this leads to a real inertia problem in industry and in the government to do things that are really in favor of free and open source software. I also think sometimes we are handicapped by the fact that English is our primary language, and English has this sort of horrible problem that the word free has multiple definitions. And so when we talk about free software, the difference between gratis and libre is hard to explain to people. And this led to the whole creation of the term open source as a sort of alias, but not really, for free software. And it's led to a lot of discussion, a lot of confusion over time. And when I think about, you know, what would it take to make Debian cool again? And what would it take to cause Debian to show up on all the mobile devices in the world? I think in order to get there, you know, we have to somehow figure out how to make sure that our mission and our messages and the things that we're focusing on stay fresh without losing sight of the original sort of fundamental set of objectives that the people who started and put a lot of early energy into this project cared about. And if you go back and read the Debian Manifesto, or if you look at the social contract, or you think about the Free Software Foundation's Four Freedoms, all of those things are even more important today than they ever have been in the past. And yet it's really, really easy for some of those fundamental values to get lost in the noise, because there's so much going on and so many things that we're all talking about. And so I worry that somehow, with so much stuff being worked on, that we have so many things to talk about that we forget sometimes the importance of focusing on some of those core original values, which are still, I believe, a really significant part of why Debian can and should and must continue to exist.
Okay, thank you very much. So I just want to do a quick sum up about the ideas of what I have here to overcome the challenges. So diversity is a good thing to get, like, open up to more people to join the community. And then we talk about the tool that have developer to engage, to work with the project, and also how to motivate people. Yeah, different way, different suggestion, not only about money, but you know that it's not direct money, but people could be motivated in the way they work in the project, and it leads to more opportunity for them in the future. That is something that we can go around, like, send out a message. And then we have something to create a good environment where people can meet more often. Face-to-face discussion is always good. And then we want Debian to run on more mobile devices. And what I have here is then finally we have Peter talking about whatever we do, we need to have a clear vision, and we need to focus on our core values. Not like too many different projects. And finally, just one last question before we open up the floor to the audience. If you could change one thing, what would that be?
Just one.
Yeah, just one. Okay, so if it's it doesn't matter. If it's too difficult to answer this question, then I would like to open the floor to the audience. We have about 6 minutes for you to interact with the panelists.
Hello. when you asked the question, what was the most difficult bug you fixed? I do not remember, but I remember the most difficult bug I was able to put on somebody else, which was an outreachy student, and he took 2 weeks for this, but it was really cool. I would have taken longer, and she reported on the DevConf on it, and I think it's more spreading the workload to young people is also something I remember more lively than maybe other things I needed to fix.
Any other question? Or some idea? So how do you can reach out to more people? Like in Guatemala, if people, young people nowadays care about having a good job and earn more money. So how do we motivate them to contribute into a free software project? Any idea? We have one.
Not a very big idea, it's just sometimes needs are very, very local and very, very specific to the people involved. So I remember hearing a story about getting grandmothers learning how to code, motivated by their need to have access to photos of their families who are far away. So it was just photo management, and so they were motivated to do that. It's just a little thing, but I think it exposes a principle of solving the need presented by the people who you're trying to help.
Yeah. Maybe an idea is to attract people before they are at the age that they need money. Because if you talk to kids, it's usually easier to relate, to express them our values and why we think free software is important. And since they don't have to think about money yet, then they can already share some values with us. Because if we wait until they are young, new professionals, then it's more difficult.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So recently I visited a high school in Vietnam in Hanoi, and I was really surprised that most of the students there use Arch Linux. You know, most of the people in the university, even university students, I see they all use Windows, but then they went to high school, they actually started to use Linux already at a very young age. So it's a very good suggestion to reach out to younger generation, and it's the job of teacher like you. So more people should become teacher and bring free software idea into school. Or even your kids, Andres, you have kids, right? Okay, so I saw a few children here. I hope they all become DBN contributors in the future. Any more questions for our panelists? Over here, please.
To the previous question about what can we do to sort of bridge the goals of financial incentive and also helping the community. At our company Hudson River Trading, we do summer internships for college students, and this year what we did was just paid college students to fix open source bugs. So now they get a feather in their cap for their resume, they get some experience, maybe we hire them to do general purpose development, but at the same time give back to the community and to the people for some things that were requested in the first place.
I think the main challenge in like bringing new people inside Debian is that we have a strong culture of scratching our own itch. So basically, we welcome people that have an issue and want to fix it inside the project. We are starting to shift towards having a few lists of things that people could do, but we don't really have time to do. But this is like a very, very marginal part of the project. There's the, for instance, in the bug tracking system, there's a newcomer tag that maintainers can use to mark bugs as being fixable and by newcomers. And basically, they're offering mentorship to get the bugs fixed. But this is really a very, very tiny part of the issues that the project has. And it's been a challenge for a few years to get actual internship subjects for the outreach team. I don't know how to fix it. So.
Mentorship, actually I have a question about how do you practice mentorship here in Debian community? I know that Jonathan wrote an article about you got your boss to be like a very good mentor in the beginning. So how is it here?
So I think the main area where there's mentorship in Debian is packaging. We have a few processes that are in place to actually get people to maintain new packages or update existing packages. I think there's some initiatives around Debian Science as well. Mentorship of the Month, is that still running?
Allowing me to ask any maybe stupid question in public to learn packaging, and this worked out quite good. So I have per year 3 to 4 months.
Oh yeah, it's okay. Should I start from the beginning? Probably. Well, we are doing this mentoring of the month, and I get 3 to 4 people finishing one package per year. So starting from scratch and to ready package, and frequently these are upstream developers who learn packaging, and then they are most competent people, way more than we ourselves. And this is I really try to propagate this because other teams could do this as well.
Any other question? So we have time for one more question.
I totally agree that Debian use more young people to join. So I'm just challenging when Debian conf rules that encourage diverse people to join DevConf over 35 years old. that rule needs to change to add one rule. If the diverse people under 35 years, it's also welcome.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so everyone, so we have come to the end of our panel. Please, a big round of applause for our panelists here. Big round of applause, please. And thank you very much for sharing your story, your experience, and thank you, the audience, for your participation. Again, final reminder, please go to the website on the volunteer page and sign up for some ship. Thank you very much.